What's going on? Welcome to another episode of the Impel Forward Podcast. What's going on, y'all? I'm your host, Leon. And it's another week. How y'all doing? As y'all can see, my host is not with me. She's in the Big Apple. She's stuck. She went to work. She had a layover, so she's not with me right now. She's not with me right now. I'm waiting on my guest. Hopefully she's about ready to come on. If not, I'm just gonna go with the flow. This might be a blooper episode. Cause I don't have no script at all. No script. I'm just up here. And it said come on. So it was time for me to come on. So I just hit the button. It's gonna be what it is. Y'all gonna have to hear my country talking. Hear my country talking, yes. But this is something I love to do and I set out to do. Start this podcast, Impel Forward Podcast. Impel. The word impel means to take action. Move forward. Take action. And that's what I for those of you who do not know, I mainly started this to be an inspiration to others, to show them that no matter what they put their mind to, that they can do it. It just takes action. A lot of times we get complacent, or we don't do our research, or we don't set out to do things to better ourselves. And I just want to show people that it can be done. It can be done. A lot of people ask me about the podcast. How do you do it? What do you do? Where do I get my things from? And it just takes research. I ain't gonna say it's easy. I mean, I ain't gonna say it's easy, but it takes work. It takes learning. I'm still getting better at my craft about on speaking on the mic. I really don't like the way I sound, but hey, that's another thing. I think y'all heard me say this before. I'm country for one. I mumble sometimes. Sometimes I talk too fast and I got to keep in mind to slow down, slow down. Yeah. But see that I didn't let that stop me from doing what I'm doing now. And I know I'm getting better. You know, it takes practice. That's anything you do takes practice. The more you do it, the better you get. The better you get. I'm still waiting on my guest. I don't know if she is able to join, but she's supposed to join last week. But she does a lot. She does have a lot going on. And we're supposed to be here today, but I don't know what's going on. But we're moving forward, impelling forward, taking action, and I'm here. So I'm gonna tell you, for those who don't know, I'm gonna go ahead and tell you this about me a little bit. If you don't know, I at the age of 16, I was sentenced to 30 years in prison. I told this on episodes long ago when I first started. I was sentenced to 30 years in prison. And I'm still learning how to package my story. So my grandmother, she's my pastor. And she's not only my grandmother, she's my pastor. So I'm gonna tell you this story right now. So how many of you have ever let somebody down? Your mother or your grandmother? How many of you have ever let your mother or your grandmother down? So my grandmother, she likes to, for me, so in church, she calls me up or talks about me a lot, about things I went through, things I've done. And she called me up one time to tell my story. And I went up and I gave a little bit, told her a little bit. Then I handed her back the mic. And this is in church now. So after I went back to my seat and church went on. So after church, you know, like we always do, go up, hug my grandmother. And she says, my family called me man. She's like, she says, man, she's looking up at me. Cause she's sitting on a stool and she's looking up at me. She's, I think 86, I think my grandma's 86 now. We argue a lot about, well, not argue, but they go back and forth about how old she is. I don't know if something with her birth certificate or what, but yeah, they go back and forth about how old she is. So she looks up at me. She says, man, I feel let down. So she's looking at me. She said, I gave you plenty of time to tell your story. Why you didn't tell your story? And I said, well, Grandma, I'm trying to learn how to package my story so I can deliver it better. And she says, well, you don't have time. You know, we're losing souls. We're losing our young ones. And so I'm just sitting there looking at her. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm like, yeah, you're right. It's been a long, and she is right. She's right. It's been a long time. And it's something I set out to do a long time ago. But it's some things that happened that I didn't do it. So she says, so me and a couple of my aunts, they're talking. And she said, I think it's what she said. She let me know again. She said it twice. She said she wanted to let me know that I let her down. She said, yeah, I feel let down. You let me down. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, out of all the things I've done, now I'm in my 40s. That's the first time she ever told me that I let her down. So I'm riding home. It's about an hour and a half drive, depending on how fast I'm going. But it's an hour and a half drive. And that's all I can think. That's all I can hear was, you let me down. You let me down. You let me down. So I'm like, wow. So, and then not only that, I started thinking about when I let my mother down. My mother told me when I was, after I got kicked out of school and I left home, she said, now I was hanging in the streets. And she said, I don't know if she remember this, but she said, if you get locked up, I ain't spending my money to come and get you. But she was the first one there. And I thought about how I let her down. Then I think about how I let my, you know, you let people down that you love. And it happens. It happened. You know, everybody do it. But it happens. So, yeah, I rode home. That long ride. That's all I could hear my grandma say, you let me down. You let me down. But, yeah. I think my guest is on. I had more to tell y'all, but I think she's here. We're going to see. I think she's driving. She stays busy. But I'm about to bring her on right now. Yo.
Hey. Can you hear me? I can hear you.
I can't hear you. I can't hear you. Let me see. Take it off mute.
It's not on mute.
Go out and come back in. Yeah, she's trying to log on. And she stays busy. As y'all can see, she's on the road now. She's driving. She says she's sorry. I think I read a lip says she's sorry. But yeah, my grandmother, she's a big inspiration. She's a real strong, powerful woman. I think my grandmother had like probably 3 strokes. She's still going strong. Love you, Grandma, if you're watching this. But yeah, she's helped. When she said that you let me down, she helped me package my stories. So I'm getting some things together. Let me try again. Here comes Crystal. Let me see. Boom.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. I had to put my earbuds in.
What's going on? Y'all, look, welcome to another episode again of the MPL4 podcast. As y'all can see, I got Crystal Taylor, the queen curator. She's she stays busy. So as y'all can see, she's driving now. She's driving now. But look, I've been on her back for some months wanting to get her on here because she does a lot of things in the community and she's doing some good
and
things.
I said I was not gonna miss this tonight. I said I'm gonna make it. I'm not gonna reschedule. I'm not gonna do my brother like that. My bad.
Hey, look, I was just going with it. I said, I don't have no script, but I'm going to go ahead and go with it. How you doing?
I'm feeling overwhelmed today, but I'm good overall. Like, you know, life is lifing. And, you know, I'm just maintaining through it and with a smile and a grateful heart. So,
right.
You know.
You are busy. So we're going to go ahead and jump into it, talking, I guess, as much as you can. Tell me this. How did you get the name the Queen Curator? Was it given to you or did you give yourself that or what?
Given to me. It was really given to me. My good friend and brother Eternal, the MC, Isha Howard, he, back in the day, I've been curating for 13 years.
Okay.
And I used to do these underground hip hop parties at different locations and spots or whatever in Durham. And Eternal said to me, he said, you know, you are really the queen of this. Like, you really be curating. Man, so be quiet. he said, you really are the queen. Right. You really are the queen of this. Like, you're the queen curator.
Right.
And I was like, that sounds really cool. He was like, yeah, I'm gonna start calling you that from now on. So every time he would see me at these little joints that I would throw, he would be like, curator, queen curator, you know.
Right.
And so it stuck with me over the time. And so at first my Twitter handle was I'm sucker free though.
I'm sucker free though. what did that mean?
That means I don't deal with suckers. That's what it means. but I just kept it because it was really cool and it became like a brand. And so everybody just knows me as the Queen Curator. Can you please be quiet? Mommy's talking. Nobody wants to hear you singing in the background, though, baby.
So tell me about the...
Sorry.
I know you got this... Beats and Bars going on. Tell us a little bit about that, Beats and Bars.
Yeah, Beats and Bars is a hip-hop festival that I started 9 years ago. It's 9 years old. Mm-hmm. And it is to build and support the influence of real hip-hop culture. And
you're breaking up. You must be in a bad area. She's breaking up. I don't know where she is, but she's breaking up.
Can you hear me now?
It's still kind of froze a little bit. Yeah, I can hear you. You froze up. But go ahead.
Okay, is now better?
Yeah. So you got to start over. Tell them about.
Okay.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay, so Beats and Bars, I started it 9 years ago. And I started it because the Underground Collective, the parent company, I was doing all these hip hop shows and producer battles all over the city, right? And so I just was like, I literally woke up one morning and was like, there's no hip hop festival in Durham. I'm gonna throw a hip hop festival. And I learned quickly what goes into building a hip hop festival. And so we've been supported by Toyota, Coca-Cola, American Tobacco Campus, NPR, you know, local businesses too, but it's really my love offering to hip hop culture and making sure it can help build community relationships with people that don't know what hip hop music is or culture is. We have a conference that's attached to it also. And the conference is the knowledge pillar of hip hop. Like everything at the festival you'll see is hip hop related, and it's all about the pillars, right? So you'll see something for DJ, you see something for producer, you see something for MC, for the dancers, for graffiti, the knowledge, all that. And we book a lot of local artists, but I book big headliners so that way people will come and hear the local people, because typically they don't get to open for people like, you know, Young Dro or Jacquees or Dead Prez or Nick Grant or Sci-Hi the Prince. So I do that for the community, for the culture, for the love. And it's been a great experience. Like, running a festival is not easy. It's very hard. I have a whole team of people that help support me. But it's 9 years old. It's a Black woman owned and ran. And it's a dope time. Like, 2 days. It's in May 10th and 11th this year. The headliners are Jacquees on Friday night and Young Dro on Saturday night. And the conference is both days also. And so the conference is going to have like a cooking demo, morning yoga. Then it's got like a bars writing class where you can learn how to write hip hop.
Okay.
There's a producer demo. Gavin Maestro, who was just featured on Beyonce's new album, he's going to do a whole beat demonstration for people. I'm going to have Chris Weeks. He's a manager of a lot of prominent, he's managed a lot of A-class artists. Mm-hmm. And I do love your singing, yes. He's managed a lot of artists, and he's going to come and talk about the business of hip-hop and what artists should know entrepreneurially around that. So it's like something for everybody. It's something for creatives. It's something for lovers of culture. It's something for people that just want to come out and enjoy the culture with other people. It's kid friendly. I don't curate anything now that's not kid friendly, obviously, because I have a 5-year-old.
Right.
So there's going to be daycare care provided for the parents that come. They can drop their kids off at one of my partners, Kate's Corner. So it's a great time. It's just like a family reunion, but it's all about hip hop. So you're gonna see people you know, but you're also gonna enjoy all the jams, all the music that we grew up on, that we love so much, that cultivated the culture. So it's not your typical festival. There's food. It's a good time, you know. It's just a great time to come together for the culture and then meet new people, see people you know, but also just lift up the culture and show the world and the city what hip hop is. You know, it's a lifestyle. It's not a thing. And so I'm really excited about people being able to see us come together and display that off of hip hop.
Right. So when you first started, did you have a team in mind to put together with you?
No. I mean, I had some of my day ones that's been always down because, you know, again, like I was curating producer battles and MC shows at the Pen Hook. So I had like people that volunteered to work the door and do things of that nature. But the planning of it, my man's Bishop Omega and Donald Salmon, they helped me put together the idea around like what it was gonna be. Donald DJ actually came up with the name Beats and Bars.
Okay.
And I was just like, oh, okay, that's cool. Cause you know, we had the bar, but we really talking about bars and beat, you know, so it was a funny time.
Shout out to Bishop out that. From Kareem.
Yeah, Kareem. Bishop, he's a nut. But Bishop been around. I met Bishop at WXDU.
Okay.
The radio station. Yeah. And he put me on game around like a lot of Durham culture, history, and things of that nature. So he really helped me. And Bishop still my host. He's hosting the festival, and he hasn't gotten fired yet. So
yeah, he boy, like you said, he a clown, boy.
He is. He hasn't got fired yet. He always say, "This is my boss, and I'm trying not to get fired."
Yeah, yeah. Now, like I told y'all in the beginning, she does a lot of things. So touch on. Now I seen something else that called you the Black Mama of August. Is that correct? Did I see that somewhere?
Yes. Yeah, the Black Mama of Black August. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was pertaining to the Black August in the park. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. That's correct.
Tell us about how did that start? Like you got your hands in a lot of things.
Yeah. every time I have interviews like this, my face hurts from blushing so much because I'm like, wow, like I'm always trying to be modest about the things, but I can't escape it because it's everywhere, right? Yeah. So,
yeah, it's everywhere.
Black August in the Park. Man, like that was an event that my friend Moses Ochola, he asked me to help him, you know, produce this event. And I said, yeah, sure, okay. And, you know, we did. And at first we thought it was going to be like 500 people. And it was more than the first amount. But we created it because we wanted to create a space for joy and give people somewhere to be free. In the midst of like the gentrification that was happening rapidly in Durham and what we wanted to see for our community. So this is actually a moment to remember individuals that have passed away in this historic is a big late month in American culture and history. And so
You broke up a little bit. You said Black August was mainly to represent people who had passed.
Had passed away. Like August is a very bloody, you know, month. It's a very bloody month Black culture. So you know, we want to be able to create for people to create.
You're breaking up a little bit. Bear with us, people. She's breaking up. She's frozen. She's in the freezer. Oh, she's gone. I hope she'll be back in a minute, but she's breaking up right now. She's driving. But as y'all can see, she does a lot in the community, a lot of different projects. And I'm pretty sure she's coming from somewhere right now doing one of those things. And like she said, she has her son with her majority of the time doing all, you know, of course when he's not in school. So yeah, she does a lot. And I'm sorry for the interruption and the breakup, but hopefully she's able to come back on in a minute. If y'all got any questions y'all want to ask, just put them in the comments. I can see it. I'm able to ask her different things. Or if you got any questions you want to ask me, type it in. We'll go from there. She's not on yet. She's not back. I think she's almost back. But I thank y'all for tuning in to the Impel Forward podcast. Things happen. Hey, things happen. She's trying to come in. Shout out to my co-host, Renee. She's back. Hold on. Crystal, can you hear me? Crystal. Can you hear me? Oh, you ain't hit nothing, did you? I heard a, you know, hello? Sound like you hit a trash can or something. Can you hear me?
No. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. I'm leaving where I am to see if that's going to help us.
Okay.
Can you hear me still?
Yeah, I can hear you. He was talking about Black August okay. In the park.
Yeah. It's a free event. It feels like reunion, homecoming. Now, people together and celebrate being free. Have Black joy, celebrate that, and just come together and be Black, and be free, and be safe together.
And did you start that by yourself too, or because that's a big task?
No, I have co-founder of Black August in Park. There's okay. Five of us that started it.
Yeah, oh, five
Joshua y'all. Gunn, Derek Beasley, Derek Beasley, Josh Gunn, Moses Ochola, Janelle Henry, and myself.
Okay. How long has that been going on?
9 years, same time.
Black August in the Park.
Since 2015.
So Black August in the Park and Beats and Bars has been 9 years?
Yep.
How?
Yep.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah.
So what, tell me, so you went to North Carolina Central, right?
I went to North Carolina Central University. I graduated in 2005. Mm-hmm.
You are in the freezer again.
Am I still?
You froze. You're in the freezer.
How about now? Am I still froze?
I can hear you.
I'm kicking Verizon to the curb. I'm telling you, I'm about to get rid of Verizon, okay? Because they are really taking my money for no reason, all right? They taking all of my money for no reason. How is it that I got Verizon? I be freezing up like I got Sprint. This is crazy, okay? This is so crazy. I am so disappointed in this service. It's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, things happen. No idea.
But yeah, I mean, Central, I graduated from Central and I wanted to work at a creative agency. Mm-hmm. And no one, all the white agencies, no one would hire me because I didn't have like work experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting here like, well, you got to hire the person to give them training to help them get work experience. Like, what are you doing? You know, but I just started my own.
Mm-hmm. So when you majored in what?
Business marketing.
Business marketing. So being the curator that you are, was you doing things like that while you was in school at Central?
No, in school, all I did was go to class and party.
Oh, yeah.
So, that's all I did. I just knew that, like, I was supposed to be in school for medical medicine because my mom is a doctor. So I was supposed to go to school for pre-med. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. Right. So I changed it to business marketing because marketing rules the world.
Right.
And I had the idea in my mind, well, if I want to run the world one day, I need to be like top-notch marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I took the class and I changed my major from pre-med to marketing. And I'm really happy that I did because I learned so much about how the world works, how people think, and how to get people to move. And mm-hmm. When I graduated, I went straight to work at Blue Cross. So I worked at Blue Cross for a little bit on the phones, and then I got off the phones because I could not do that. I was like, I got to have more excitement to my life, you know, my everyday, you know. And so that's when I went on my journey to figure out what I wanted to do. And so I was so like discouraged by the agency that I was trying to work for. Like I had applied to them at least three times, and I would get closer and closer each time, and then they still wouldn't hire me. And I just said, you know, I was working at Blue Cross, and I kept working there, and then I had a bad racial experience there. But I learned a lot from Blue Cross, and I still have a lot of friends there that really have supported me still today. And I just recognized, like, I come from a family of entrepreneurs. Like, what am I doing working? And all the people before me, my grandparents, my parents were entrepreneurs. Why am I, you know, clocking in on somebody else's clock?
Right.
So I started to, you know, I went to a beat battle that Knife Wonder had in Raleigh, like probably in 2010 or something, 2011. And I was so mesmerized by the beat battle. I was like, oh my God, this is so dope. Like, I want to do this, you know? And I did it like a year later. And it was the easiest thing. I was like, man, I love the plan stuff, you know? Right. And so then I said, well, I'll be an event planner, you know? I'm thinking I'm just going to make it big as this event planner. And I planned a wedding. I planned one of my friend's wedding. They're still married to this day. And it was the worst experience ever. And I was like...
Because of your planning or...
No, not because of my planning. Because the bridezilla and the husband and all the flowers and the table decoration. It was just too much. It was too much. And I was like, girl, you do not need to be doing this. So I said, I'm not planning out near other wedding. I have never planned a wedding since then. That was my first and only wedding. But I said, I'm going to plan these beat battles. Like, I like to see the producers compete against each other.
Right.
And I want to see what that, I want to do that. Because I'm a band kid. In high school, I played the clarinet and I've danced. Ballet and piano, you know, I'm all about arts and humanities, right?
Where'd you go to high school at?
Clinton High. Clinton Dark Horses.
Are you County. From Clinton? Is that 95?
No, that's 40 East.
Okay. Yeah, 40. Somewhere, it's somewhere around. Yeah, Clinton. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it Dark Horse? Dark Horse, right?
I'm a proud Dark Horse, baby. Proud Dark Horse. Yes. Yeah, because the country ain't never left me at all. Like, I'm still a country girl all day.
You know, I'm from Fayetteville, right?
Oh, for real? That's what's up.
Yeah.
We cousins then. We cousins then. 910 in the building. Fox 99, the big stick, okay?
26
That's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was like, let me do this. So I started doing the producer battles. I became popular off of that. And then I became popular off of doing the shows, the Queen Curator stuff, you know? And so I met MCs that were like, yo, can you listen to my music? You know? And so it just became to be continuously be a thing. I kept adding on to experimenting with and seeing what happened. And so.
You went out. Can you? I think you hit the mute.
Happened. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear
you. So people started to manage me. And I was like, no. Like, I'm not no manager. And I tried managing a couple of times, but I was more so consulting people. And so then I recognized that I had my own creative agency, you know, if you will. And so during COVID is when I changed it from just being like entertainment platform to produce events to a creative agency to be able to advise entities like Duke, the city, the state, to be able to help them advise like what community engagement looks like for them to us.
Okay. So when you changed your major, how did your mother feel, mother and father feel?
Oh, well, my mama was not happy. She's a doctor, so she was not happy at all.
I figured that, but I just wanted to hear you say that.
No, she was not feeling the vibe. Like, she was looking at me like I was crazy. Like, she was not feeling it.
And I asked that because I watched some other podcasts and people talk about when they start college, their parents want them to be something. Mm-hmm. And I've seen one guy, he started as he wanted to be a doctor because his family pushed him to be a doctor. But he quit school and started doing real estate. He's pretty wealthy now.
Mm-hmm.
You see that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I still have a thing for being in medicine. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I really admire my mother's, like, her brain is impeccable.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I've taken from her, like, a lot of that, like, mm-hmm. kindness to people and wanting to help people and support people and serve people. Like, I'm big on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't go for it. Now, I have pondered with the idea of getting my PA
mm-hmm.
just to have it, just to say I have it and to mm-hmm. serve people in certain type of capacities probably, but that's not, maybe when I retire in 3 years, I'll go and do it just to be doing it. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? But I'm not going to be trying to work in no hospital or nothing. I'm,
right.
Yeah.
What type of impact did your father have in your life? Did you grow up with your father?
Yeah. My family was intact. My dad was my rock. I'm a big daddy's girl. I'm the oldest.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, from, you know, Southern man from Alabama, Tuscaloosa, mm-hmm. Alabama. And he grew up most of his life in Newark, New Jersey, driving. He had a taxi cab.
She must have got a phone call, y'all.
Like,
go ahead, I can eat.
Okay. And so he had a taxi cab company. My dad has always been an entrepreneur. You know, he owned a club in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
He had a really big music influence in his life, which is probably where I got mine from.
Well, he didn't have no problem with you changing your major.
No, my dad, I'm an Aries, my dad was a Leo. So we were always in trouble.
Right.
So, you know, I would tell him things and my mama would not know nothing. He'd be like, don't say nothing to your mama. I'm like, daddy, we're not supposed to be doing that. Like, you're supposed to tell. But my dad was the one that, you know, every time I have a show or an event, I would call him on my way there or on mm-hmm. my way home and let him know how it went, what was going on with it. You know, he would give me ideas to do stuff. So my dad was my guy. You know, when he passed, it was a very difficult time for me because I was really getting ready to shut down the operation.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but you know, he's still with me and he'd be throwing me alley-oops from heaven. So, you know,
how long ago has it been since he passed?
Daddy passed 7 years ago.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been able to hold up pretty well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's not a day that don't go by that I don't think about him or talk to him or miss him. Like, he was my partner, like, period. Like, I would talk to him on the phone all day. When I'd be in the car driving, I talk to him on the road or, you know, like I said, before and after events. And I mm-hmm. still say something to him before I have a show or before I have an event, you know. He had a really big impact on my life and he just taught me a whole lot. My mom, she was very strict
mm-hmm.
and, you know, she was a doctor, you know, she was very strict. She was always at the hospital, but she also, they both taught me and my sister a whole lot in different mm-hmm. ways. You know what I'm saying? And my dad gave me like streets and my mom gave me like how to be a lady type situation. You know, my dad was like, Negroes don't like this, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, we could talk about stuff, and I would tell him something the dude did or whatever. He was like, you know, I can hear my daddy now. Like, you know, get that nigga out of here, yo. Like, he's no good.
Yeah, sound like that's how I'm gonna be.
Yeah, he was wrong, rugged, but he was a cool cat, man. Like, he was cool. So,
good.
My cousins always say, like, girl, you act just like your daddy. Like, the key ring on your hip and everything, you know, like, just a cool breeze. You know, that's how my dad was.
I see. He must have been good because What you talking about and you smiling?
Yeah, that was my guy, man. That was my dude. Yep. Manson looked like him a little bit too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you you have a lot of, how can I put it? Well, tell me this. You've been pro-black.
Yeah.
How do you you do work in the governor's mansion, right? And with the governor or something like that?
I do work for the North Carolina Department of Culture and Natural Resources, yes.
And then thinking back, you said you dealt with the racism at Blue Cross.
Yeah, yeah.
So how is that working, doing things with the government? I mean, with the governor and things like that. You running across anything?
I've run across a lot. Right.
some you probably can't talk about, I know.
So, okay, I will say this, like, I've had some very true life experiences that they don't teach us in mm-hmm. school or in training. Mm-hmm. When people call me, when they call Crystal Taylor, they know they're calling Crystal Taylor because I'm not afraid to tell white people that they're racist.
Right.
They know I'm not afraid to tell people that they're misusing their funds and not supporting black initiatives or black community engagement. Mm-hmm. I'm unapologetically do not care about right. making people that don't look black, that are not black people, uncomfortable about where they're wronging community. So people know what they're getting when they call me. They already know. Somebody's already told them, they gave them the 411, like, listen, she's gonna tell people, you know, this and the third, you know. So I'm very proud of that, because a lot of black people generationally have been afraid to speak up for what's right or what is fair. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a problem being that voice at all. Right. Working for the state and for the governor's mansion, for the governor, it's been a privilege, mm-hmm. because there are people in office who really want to see change for our community.
Right.
And it's been a blessing to be able to work with those people and keep uplifting black initiatives, black culture, black community. Mm-hmm. And they are doing the work.
Right.
And I wouldn't, most people know that I'm not going to take contracts just because of the dollar. Mm-hmm. Like, when I meet people, and even like you, like, if I meet a person and I don't feel the connection or the vibe, I don't, you know, I take spiritual relationships and what God is doing in my life very seriously. Mm-hmm. I don't meet people. I don't believe in circumstance. I don't believe by chance. I don't believe in, you know, just so I don't believe in stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything that I've been able to do and people that I meet, I know is for a greater purpose of what I'm supposed to be doing.
Right.
So I take that stuff very seriously. But I have worked in spaces, particularly the city of New Bern, where it was very rough and hard mm-hmm. to get them to understand black perspective, black community, black needs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate because there's a lot of still old dated mind states that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you present things to people and they still don't understand why it's necessary and it's a waste of money and why, you know, they're still holding community back.
Right.
So I've done work in those spaces both ways. Yeah.
So what do you think about the, you're starting to hear, say, the black and the brown? When they say that, they kind of put different races in that black and brown, you know, what do you think about that?
I mean, I think that it's all relative, you know, because, you know, Arab people are not black people.
Okay.
You know, Latino people are not black people, you right. know, and they don't, but in my perspective, they are, because we all came from the motherland, whether they know it or not.
Right.
But you know, I try to give space for the other cultures so that way they won't feel like isolated in one group, right?
Right.
And so when I'm talking about my work, I'm talking specifically about black people.
Right. That's my point. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right. But I also keep in mind that I do advocate for my people of color that are not, they don't associate being Black. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. so, you know, for the festival, for example, we have the flyer in Espanol because a lot of Latin, Latino, Mexican, Spanish people, they love hip hop culture too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to make space and make people aware of like this other whole community of people that are being left out, but they're making their own strides and they're making their own way. Mm-hmm. And I have learned in like racial equity trainings that there's been a long time plot with through the government to separate all of us mm-hmm. in these categories and classes. And, you know, at the end of the day, they should be glad that we, you know, gave them the blueprint to life as Black people. You know what I'm saying? That's what I truly believe. And people know me to know that I know that. But I lift up other communities and cultures too, because they're being marginalized in a way that, you know, we can truly relate to. You know what I'm saying?
So do you have been in that space with the state and the governor? Do you have any white associates that you can call friends or just associates?
Yeah, I got a lot of white friends. Like, okay. I have, but you know, it's funny because my white friends are down for the cause. They know me. They know what I'm about. They support my events. They donate. They help me make connections with people. They sit on boards that I'm a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this funny running thing where I'm like, you know, they just happen to be white, you know?
Right.
You know, but there are, and I've been fortunate, and that's something that, you know, I've been fortunate to have. And I prayed about this kind of thing too, like running into the right people, like, you know, God put the right people in my path that will help me, that will support me, that will teach me things. And, you know, my boss from Blue Cross, he was a executive. He taught me, he was my first lesson of like financial literacy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he just taught me that, you know, like what it looks like from a white man's perspective, finances and mm-hmm. how he manages those things and how he, you know, manipulates the system and how he does this, you know, and that was really helpful for me because I didn't even know nothing close to what he was teaching me and telling me about.
Right.
You know, and so he didn't have to do that. You know, I've met people, I've met some white people that have been very unkind, whether it's because of my hair or, you know, who I am in general, like the work that I do. It's not very safe, like advocating for Black farmers and Black joy and, you know, all these things.
Right.
So I do protect myself, you know, because I know that there are people out here that know who I am and don't like what I do and don't like how loud and unapologetic that I am about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I stay low right. unless I got to come out for whatever.
So you're saying that there are some good white people out here?
There are some really good white people out here, yes.
And like you just said, you know, I know, you know, I've only known you a short amount of time, but I know y'all all about that Blackness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why when I first seen the something you did with the governor, I was like, dang, I don't know how that is with who she is working or whatever.
Yeah, no, it's you know, my mentor from college always told me, he said, you're gonna be an entrepreneur, you're gonna show up as yourself.
Right, right.
And I don't have to, you know, the secretary, I know the state secretary, I know the governor, you know, I know the deputy secretary in the office. I mean, they are all very kind, lovely people, and they listen to the concerns of the community that I bring back to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they work with me and we work together to figure out how to navigate that stuff and provide the things that the community needs. Mm-hmm. And it's just been a blessing to be able to do that, like be myself and say, hey, what are we doing? Like, we're not doing this right. We got to do it like this. We got to do it like that. And only one time, like I said, in the city of New Bern, where I didn't feel as supported and welcomed to do that work. It didn't change me. It just let me know how hard it would be to change the mindsets of those people sitting on those boards and spaces.
Right.
But usually when people call me, they call me because they want me to help them talk to somebody and get something right.
And you ain't breaking no rules or no laws. You just being yourself.
So, I'm just being myself, telling them what it is. They don't like it, they don't like it. You know, like, I don't worry about that part.
So you mentioned something that I was going to get to, the Black Farmers Market. Tell us about that and what you're doing with that. Like, hey, listen, y'all, she's doing a lot of things, like I said at the beginning. So she has a hand. In prison, we used to call it every set, and she's on every set.
I'm on every set, facts. So I'm a co-founder of the Black Farmers Market. I just recently stepped down, and I'm on the board now. So the Black Farmers Market, you know, we started that in 2019 to create space for Black farmers. My co-founder, Pierre Janelle, her father knew some farmers here in the area, and they talked to them, and they were just talking about their experiences with other markets and how they had felt like they weren't being fairly treated, things of that nature. And so we put them together and we asked them about, you know, doing a market. And we created the space solely for them to be able to have that, and also to be able to provide fresh food and vegetables to the community that wasn't getting it. And so we're in Durham, they're in Durham and Raleigh. Actually, the first market in Durham starts this Sunday at Durham Tech from 1 to 4. And then in Raleigh the following weekend at Southeast Raleigh YMCA. So it's very intentional work to provide, you know, foods for our community and also support our farmers. You know, farming is the longest running entrepreneurial job of Black people.
Right.
And so, you know, the narrative that Black farmers don't exist, or, you know, they don't need support, or they don't grow their own food, is bullshit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just been a journey of mine when I was working directly with them to make sure people knew that and give farmers opportunities that these white farmers be getting since they learned how to farm from us, you know. Right. So it's a free thing. It's a free event. You know, I implore everybody to go and support the farmers, get something from them to support them, because this is their livelihood and it's a great opportunity to get eat good, fresh food.
Right. You said that's in Durham, this Sunday?
This Sunday in Durham at Durham Tech from 1 to 4, and it's free. Yeah.
Okay. How often is it in Durham?
It's every, let me see, what Sundays is coming up? The second time? I think it's every first. It's every first and third, and then Raleigh is second and fourth.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So with the is the something else again? I think where you had your hands in, because I seen Freedom, Freedom in the Park, Freedom Park,
Freedom Park. Yeah, that
now,
was
what is that?
That Freedom Park is the state's first park that reflects and gives homage and remembrance to Black leaders.
Okay.
So it's a beautiful beacon that sits in the middle of this park, and it has all these beautiful quotes from like James E. Shepherd, Maya Angelou, just individuals that have been relatively like impactful in our revolution. Mm-hmm. And there's quotes about them all over the park. It's beautiful. So I curated the grand opening and ribbon cutting of that park.
Right. I seen that. I was like, man,
it was an amazing experience. The governor was there, of course, and he gave remarks, and they cut the ribbon and opened the park up to the public. So if you've not been to the park, please go to it. It's right across the street from the governor's mansion, and it's beautiful at night. I mean, it's beautiful in general, but it's a really big gold beacon that lights up. And it has so many inspiring quotes from people that we all know, you know what I'm saying? Polly Murray, like, just individuals that have really uplifted us and inspired us to be.
Now, resilient. When you say light up, I'm picturing blue lights. What color are lights?
It's white. It's a white light. Yeah.
That's my favorite color. Maybe that's why I'm picturing blue lights.
No, it's a white light. It's a beautiful beacon, though. It's really nice. And okay. Pierce Freelon's father, that was the last project that he created.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Another thing. Tell us about Get Happy. What is that?
Get Happy. That's my nonprofit.
Nonprofit. That's your nonprofit.
So I got a regular business, a Underground Collective is my creative agency. Mm-hmm. And Beats and Bars is the music festival that Underground Collective is the baby at Underground Collective. And then Get Happy is my nonprofit.
And what is that about?
So when I was when I had just had Mansa, Mansa was probably like 6 months old or something. And I was very unhappy in my life. Okay. And I was trying to figure out like what joy looked like for me, what happiness looked like for me. And me and Derek, his father, we weren't in a good relationship. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, Lord, I want to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and
tell me more about that. What you mean? Why, was you not in a good space because you were his father or just?
I wasn't in a good space because I wasn't happy within myself.
Okay.
And then our relationship didn't add anything to it, you know, because when you're not hurt, people hurt people. Mm-hmm. And when you're not full of joy, happiness, like your own thing, then it can become toxic and just not a good experience, right? And so he was already dealing with some stuff himself too.
Right.
So we were both.
She's getting a call, y'all.
I mean, I put my phone on do not disturb. Let me see. Hold on. Let me put this on do not disturb. People keep calling me and they're like, why are you not answering the phone, girl?
Hey, you're a busy woman. I understand. Well, y'all who don't understand, I understand. She's a busy woman.
So thank you for grace. But I just wasn't filled. My cup was not filled, you know, and I was searching for love and joy and peace and all other types of things that I should not have. And so I was just sitting in my rocking chair with Manson trying to put him to sleep. And I was just like, God, I just want to get happy. I want to be happy. And the next day, my mentor from Central called me. He said, you know, what do you think about starting a nonprofit? And I was like, I didn't even want to start a nonprofit. I was like, no, I don't want to get into that because it's too much, you know, too much work. I already got stuff going on, you know, whatever, whatever. But I did. And, you know, I said, I know exactly what I'm going to call, because the reason why I said yes is because at the time I was on a contract with Central and Duke to create Ethno Dramas, which were health disparity projects to help people learn about health disparities in a really cool way outside of just like these regular, you know, videos people make you watch that are really boring. It was like TV. But the TV script was based off of like AIDS or HPV or COVID or something like that, right? And so I said, yeah, I know I'm going to call it Get Happy. And he was like, really? And I said, yeah. He said, I said, well, what is it going to be about? And I was like, it's going to be about helping Black people find joy through trauma. And
everything Black.
I'm blackity black. Right. I'm light skinned, but I'm a dark nigga.
right.
But I did that because I really knew that there were people just like me that grew up in a home. My parents, they loved each other, but they did argue a lot. They didn't have a lot of conversations about loving yourself. There was just stuff that happened that, you know, our parents did the best they could with us, you know what I'm saying? Right. And in today's life, we've learned about therapy and different things to do to find happiness and joy and healing,
right?
Came
with a lot of that.
And they ain't trying to hear that, you know what I'm saying? Like, my mama's still looking at me crazy about being vegan, or when I take a little vegan stint and my son doesn't eat dairy, and, you know, it's just like, they ain't trying to hear that, but at the same time, like, you know, there's things that still can be done for healing. You know what I mean? Like, some kids, Black kids, never been to a beach before. Some Black kids never been mountain hiking before. Some kids have never been camping before. They don't know what yoga is and things of that nature, you know? So my nonprofit exposes our community, young and old, to things that will help bring them joy, to help maybe mitigate some of the trauma and hurt and healing that they need to do and open them up to those things. So, you know, it looks like a lot of different things, but it is curated to help us be mm-hmm. exposed to things that we might consider are only things for white people that they are not, you know.
Wow, that's amazing. So how
Thank
did you,
you.
Being a leader, the leader that you are, do you think leading comes natural or you think it's taught?
For me, it's natural.
Natural, yeah.
But I've still learned a lot about myself and my style
mm-hmm.
through the last 13 years of working. Right. And that's me being able to take criticism mm-hmm. well, to be able to teach people what's in my head and not expect them to know what's in my mind,
mm-hmm.
And giving people grace for learning. I'm going through that right now with some of my team. Like, my team is diverse. It's like young and old, you know, mm-hmm. but I have more youngins working for me now than I thought that I would, because I don't mm-hmm. really like the new millennial group of kids too much. They're just different, you know. And I find myself oh my god, I am 41. Like, oh my god, I am 41, and these kids are 20 something years old, and I'm just like, when I was your age, I was doing this, blah, 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 blah. You know, and they're not even close to that, you know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? And so how they receive information, you know, learning how to adapt to how they learn and what matters to them and things of that nature. So I will say being a leader is natural for me, but also like how to lead and who you're leading is something right. that should be taught, you know, like making sure you don't talk to every person on your staff the same way, because
it's funny to see that, because I was trying to I have the barbershops and mm-hmm. something, you know, I was explaining to one of my guys that everybody's going to be treated different no matter what you think, but long as it's fair, you know.
Yeah.
Some of them have different relationships than it's three of us that we've been me, Mo, and Phil, we kind of like family. So mm-hmm. we've been knowing each other for a long time. So, and that's with any business, really, the relationship that you have with different ones is going to be different, but long as it's
fair. Yeah. And that's the thing too, like, I have high expectations
right.
in my life in general. Like, you know, I appreciate the abundance that God has given me.
Mm-hmm.
But I also am going somewhere. Right. And I always teach my staff, like, you know, you need to figure out where you're going
mm-hmm.
and what you want, because if you don't know, then you're going to be all over the damn place and you'll be wasting my time.
Right.
If you know what you want and where you're going, and then you know how long you want to take to get there, and you know who you want to work with to do what you want to do, it just makes it kind of easier for people. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I do treat certain members of my team differently because I know some know and some don't, and some right. are just kind of figuring it out, and some mm-hmm. are like, I think this is what I want to do, and they're trying to strive to it, but I also, you know, push their back up against the wall. Oh, Lord.
Right. Good.
I push their, yeah.
Okay.
I'm sitting in my car.
You're in a safe space, ain't you?
Oh, yeah. I'm watching traffic and all this. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I do try to, you know, I always want to teach what I know mm-hmm. to my team.
Right.
I don't get too crazy with it, but right. I do let them know, like, what is out there for them.
Exactly.
You know, if they want it.
Right.
It's only for them to believe it and go after it. Like, the only thing that makes me different from anybody else is that's the fact that I have a tenacity in me that I'm not stopping.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When I met J. Cole years ago. right? Mm-hmm. I met him several times. We've talked several times. And one of the things that I will never forget is when he did the Dollar and a Dream tours, and he was going around different small local venues. Mm-hmm. And he signed a dollar for me. And he said to me, he was like, we from the same like, cut.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ain't no reason.
Uh-oh, she's in the freezer again. Thank y'all for tuning in to the Impel Forward podcast with Crystal Taylor. As y'all can see, she has a lot going on. She has her hands in a lot of things. She's on every set, but she's great at what she does.
I don't know why my camera wouldn't go. Why did my camera go away? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. You're just in blackout mode right now.
Oh, maybe because it recognizes I'm in the car. I'm gonna turn my car off and see.
Turn your car light on.
My car light is on.
Oh, it is on. Oh, wow.
Yeah, but it's not.
There you go. Oh, wait, you went away. You still there? Verizon has let her down once again, y'all, but we're still here. Welcome to another episode of the Impel Forward podcast. Thank y'all for tuning in. You got any questions? Put them in the comments. Thank y'all for tuning in to the Impel Forward podcast. But yeah, as y'all can see, Crystal, she does a lot of things, man. She does a lot in the community. She's a go-getter. She's a go-getter, and that's what I like about her. You're back.
Again, Verizon.
You're back.
I'm liable to change the service tomorrow, okay? Like, this is unforgivable. Like, no.
But you were saying J. Cole signed a dollar for you saying
that y'all signed a dollar for me. He was telling me, like, you know, you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, let's go, you know, and, you know, being at Dreamville, I've been to Dreamville every year and mm-hmm. just watching what he's done. I mean, I'm a huge fan, of huge supporter of him as a person, you know.
So what do you think about his apology?
I appreciate it.
Right.
I appreciate yeah. it because I know what it's like. Like when he was speaking about it on stage,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if people have been able to watch that or hear everything he said or whatever, but I was there listening right. to what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And he specifically talked about how Kendrick is his boy.
Right.
And the fact that this came. And, you know, everybody was like on him, like, yo, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna say something? You know, his line was burning up, right? Mm-hmm. So ego was in play.
Right.
Right. And so he's acknowledging that the fact that, you know, his ego got on him and he did it, right? Right. Now, if you ask me, he just jabbed him a little bit.
Right. Right. Yeah.
He didn't rock him out like we know he could. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I had that same argument, and you see different people saying that, oh, well, he had time to write it, he had time to produce it, he had time to do this and
I wouldn't be surprised if Cole just walked in the booth and came off the dome with it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I wouldn't be, but I respect him because anytime your spirit is not right with something,
right,
you have to honor that. And this man right. is on stage in front of 52,000 people talking about his relationship with God and his clarity and his life, whatever, whatever. And you can hear people in the crowd like, oh, man, what? Like, you know, yeah. because people, if we live in a world, Leon, where it's like people are really jacked up and they really eating the wrong things.
Oh, yeah.
Like yeah, literally and spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I can hear Cole who he is in his music, where he at.
Mm-hmm.
That's because I be listening for that. I don't listen to a lot of BS. You know what I'm saying? Right. keep my mind and spirit clear. But the fact that he has become so close to God in that way, where if he does something out of his character that don't make him feel good about himself, then you have to honor that. And a lot of people, the industry, and this is why Beats and Bars is important also, because the industry, people in general, these regular people out here, all these regular folks out here, they just pawns.
Right.
And the industry knows what to feed y'all. The industry knows what you're going to want to hear. They're not going to play good stuff on the radio.
Right.
They know Black people thrive off of music and entertainment. They do the studies on us. And that's why I don't have no problem being who I am in community. Because I know that. And people that are in the industry, like deep like that with Cole, like, he knows that. And so if you pay attention, you see how then anybody and everybody, they were trying to get somebody involved in it. Rick Ross, like, you know, they're trying to.
It's getting crazy. Yeah.
And it's like, it don't, for what? And it's like, and my thing is also, lastly, I'll say this, is that I'm glad he did that, because Biggie and Pac was never enemies.
But see, I brought up the same argument, and my boy, he tried to say, well, it ain't gangster. I said, well, it ain't. He said it ain't gangster rap, this and that. I said, it ain't until it is. You
know? That's right, because California, the West, Inglewood, they don't play about Nipsey. They don't play about Kendrick. They don't play.
Right.
And you got some loose Negroes up there that's willing to do whatever. It's like Cole said, his mans was like, yo, I can handle this situation, bro. And he's like, bro, chill.
See, I said the same thing. So you saying a lot of the same things I said, just because
we don't know. Look, I got some people right now
that arrive for you.
I got goons, okay?
Right.
If I make a phone call or a text or meet and sit in my car in a certain spot, they're gonna be like, yo, what's good? What you need?
Right.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, it's kind of the same thing. Like, I ain't got to say nothing. I ain't got to do nothing. Like, these people are going to do that. And it's the same way for him and Kendrick.
Right.
And they know that.
Right. Yeah, Lynn, you're along the same lines with that. Yeah.
But it is mind-boggling to me to see how people are like, he lame, he this. I'm just like,
yeah,
bro, like, for real? Like, who are you rap battling out here? Like, go to YouTube. You want to watch a rap battle? Go to YouTube. There's plenty of them up there.
Man, you saying there's a lot of same things.
There's plenty of rap battles on YouTube for you to go support them niggas. Like, go support them. I said,
you want to see a battle? Go look at some rap battle.
For real. It's just, to me, it's just another, you know, I hate what industry is doing and what has been doing since, like, Molly Perkins is. Right. I hate what industry is doing.
Right.
But they have studied us so, and this is why Black folks got to wake up and stop being sheep.
Right.
Because they are studying us. The reports are coming out on a regular basis. It's the policy, all of it. Like, they know we got the money. They know we're going to get the money. They know how we're going to spend the money. They know how we're going to get our information. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they got to know that, and they're not paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
To the gimmicks or the marketing and the things that are going out there.
Right.
Like, it ain't no coincidence that McDonald's be having the most Black actors in their commercials. Do you relate to white people? No, you don't. You relate to Black people going to McDonald's. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, you know, it's the same situation. So it's like, you know, hopefully the work I do helps with breaking some of that up in their minds. You know what I'm saying? I know I'm not gonna get everybody, but that's at the end of the day what it is for me and my work. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, trying to help us become conscious.
Right. Yeah, it's gonna be, that's some work.
It's work.
Yeah.
It's work.
One thing I want to ask you, the team that you have, do you have one team that works with you on all your different things you
everything.
Have going. How many you have on your team? Because I'm asking you, 10.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm asking you that because, you know, I'm starting. Well, I'm going on 2 years now with my podcast, and you know, I had a barbershop, but I'm trying to, you know, put this together. So I was just asking. Okay, yeah. 10 is a good
number. Yeah, I mean, it fluctuates, you know, between 6 and 10. Mm-hmm. But I always give them opportunities across the board.
Right.
Know? And they can choose to work something when they don't want, you know, but all the work is relative to what we do in general. And it's a great training. I think that they would say that Crystal, you know, I know 1 year, in the past couple of years, they've said to me they made more money working with me than they do with their, like, other little gigs and side hustles they be having. So that makes me really happy to know that I'm able to help provide some money to them. And they learn a lot of stuff, too.
Besides making the money, most money working with you, what do you think they would say about you, the person?
Oh, and they would probably say, don't get iced.
Iced? What did that mean?
So in the company, it's a running joke. Like, Crystal will ice you if you F up. Like, if you mess up, she will ice you. You do not want to get iced because something happens in the universe. When I ice a person on my team, they don't get no work, no gigs. It just stops.
Oh, you put them in the freezer.
Yeah.
You ain't getting nothing.
Yeah. No, but seriously, I think that they would say that they would say heavy is the head that wears the crown, but she's the one that should be wearing the crown. I think they would say all the nice things about me. Because they often make me feel incredibly, you know, honored to know them, to work with them, to be able to teach them stuff. And then my team is like a big family, you know. It's not a transactional situation. These are people that I'm doing incredible work with, and I'm teaching them things, and they're with me with my son, and, you know, we're traveling up and down the state doing good work and stuff. And they tell me about me all the time.
Right.
And in a very good way that's, you know, humbling. You know, they just tell me I'm amazing and I'm great and they're fortunate and everybody knows me. And, you know, I feel like a really good role model for them. So it's cool. It's cool to have people that love you and care for you like that.
That's good. So what's next for you? Anything new, any new projects you working on or got your hands in?
No. I actually, no. I'm just...
I knew it was something.
No. I do have the block party, the Beats and Bars block party coming up on April 27th. That's free at American Tobacco Campus. And then I'm working on a choir ball in Kinston.
Okay.
And a talent show in Wilson. And, you know, I'll be hopefully taking a break here soon. The year goes by so fast for me, man.
Yeah, like, you're moving.
It goes by so fast. I was supposed to be in Puerto Rico today, but I couldn't make it.
Yeah.
So
we're moving. Well, It was good talking to you, having you. How long has it been since I've been trying to get you on? Been some months, right?
Yeah. I'm so sorry about my
connection.
No, trashy Verizon situation.
You good. Things happen. I mean,
This was cool. Like, we have to do this again, like a mid-year check-in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we can definitely do that, you know. Look, keep up with what you got going on, you know, letting everybody know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, because there is something coming, but I can't talk about it yet.
Okay. And it's something that you said earlier that I was going to say, but I didn't want to say it. I was going to tell you later on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I can't remember. It'll come to me.
Okay.
But yeah. But it's great that you know, one of the things I have a slogan is to seize the opportunity to grasp, you know, just to grasp your dreams. And that's what you're doing. You know, you seize the opportunity to grasp your dreams. And that's what Impel Forward is about. You know, Impel means to take action. And like I was telling people before you came on, that's why I started the podcast, not necessarily for me, but to show other people that if you take action and just do it. Oh, you know, yeah. Could be some, you know, bumpy roads, you know, in between things you're trying to do, but as long as you will learn why you're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that for many reasons. And it's true, you know, when I watch people move in the world and people, how they talk about what they can't have or what's not for them. And, you know, it's all a mind state. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, and I learned this. I went to a self-development class. I would tell people to go to self-development classes because it helps break up the stuff in your mind that you have been dealing with for such a long period of time. You know what I'm saying? But I changed my mind state and I started really like healing internally, like with how I felt about myself, what I thought about, what I wanted to do, you know, what I, you know, the things that have happened to me that made me feel like I couldn't do stuff. Like I really took time to heal, do the work on myself and come to the terms of what God created. And we all have something that God placed on us, gave us, has implored us to do in this world. And, you know, once you keep asking God to support you and figuring it out and guide your steps and you submit in that way, I truly believe that people can find the peace, the wholeness, the happiness, the love that like that they deserve. And we all deserve it. Like, right. I'm not no different than anybody except for the fact that I don't want to stop. I'm going to get what God has for me. I'm going to reap all the abundance, like everything. I have a choice every day to get up and live my life as full as possible and ask God to bring the blessings to me to be able to, you know, continue moving forward. Right. And I teach my son that too. Right. And so, you know, when I meet people that they don't think that being an entrepreneur is not for them or this other thing, I'd be like, you know, say who?
Right, right. Yeah.
Who, you know, but also again, it's a mind state. And you just can't wake up with that. Like you have to do conscious work and it's very hard work every day. Like I've had a rough week, bro. Right. But I still stand in abundance because I'm breathing. Like I have food in my house. Like the simple things are real what abundance looks like. You know what I'm saying? And then the fact that I get to go into a car, that's the extra layer of it. The fact that I got gas is an extra layer of it. So people take things for granted all the time. And, you know, we should not. If you look at our ancestors and you go down here to Stagville and you see what the houses look like that they slept on the floor in. Like to be able to have an apartment, to be able to have four walls, be able to have doors that lock, be able to have, you know, a blanket. That is abundance.
Right.
But if we can't have complete sheer gratitude for that, it's like we're not going to appreciate nothing else.
Speaking of that, I'm going to see what you think about this. So the national anthem, you know, last couple of years, I stopped standing for the national anthem. And what you're saying is like it's been about a month. I was at a game. I don't know why I was thinking this. I'm like, I guess I'm looking around. I'm thinking like, even though a lot of people still have bad things to say about America and, you know, a lot of these places are corrupt. And I think about other countries, like they don't have a lot of things we have or can do a lot of things we do. I started thinking to myself, should I start standing again? You know, what do you stand for the national?
Depending on where I'm at.
Right, right.
Depending on how I feel, you know, his words matter, you know what I'm saying? But again, like when I went to South Africa last year, it really like put a lot of things in perspective too, you know, like we are, even though we have been taken from a place and brought to a place that's not our natural, you know, where you know, our ancestors were not here. Like, it's an opportunity in my mind, you know. It's an opportunity for me to be able to get up here, make money, learn, have a great education, and then go back home.
Right.
And build
create, you know, like Mansa about to have a condo over in South Africa, you know, like, right. But again, it goes back to the mind state and learning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have got to be able to put ourselves in a position to learn and know better, to do better. Like, before I knew all I knew about Africa and my lineage and stuff, I wasn't thinking about none of that.
Right.
I'm just over here living, enjoying life as an Black American, you know. Mm-hmm. And now, yeah, I'm still a Black American, but I'm smart.
Mm-hmm.
And I have connections in Africa. Like, I have family over there that I'm talking to and I'm building with, I'm creating things. So, you know, I'm expecting to be able to really let my son have generational wealth in Africa. You know, through my African contributions, businesses, whatever. Mm-hmm. Because that's what generational wealth looks like. You know, not trying to get him in a rat race over here. It's a rat race over here.
Right.
So, you know, depends on where I'm at.
Yeah, I think that's me too. So I don't think I stood the last time, but I guess it depends on where I'm at too. Myself, I be getting looked too. I think I like that. People looking at me crazy. I think I'll be waiting on something.
Look, I can tell you how many people look at me crazy for a lot of things.
Right.
Stopping our show.
Right. Well, it was nice talking to you. We're going to have to do this again.
Likewise. I got to go pick up Mansa now and take him home, but Thank you so much for this. I really enjoyed myself. It was great.
Yeah, appreciate it. All right, there you have it for another episode of the Impel Fort Podcast.
Take care.
All right, you too.
Bye.